Welcome to the 8th episode of Pitch Invasion. It is a bit of a substitution at the moment. My name is Mzamo Moloi, sitting in Loazi's global seat. Loazi, you pay me one back. But I've got the boys here. Hola.
Loazi is always not here when Man United lose. I don't know if it's a conspiracy. I don't know if it's a surprise, but I'm just saying. But what you know who we do have here that needs to account?
Oh, yeah.
A massive result on the weekend.
I heard in episode 7 someone saying the next time he sees you is either you're his friend or his enemy, and predicting win streaks of
speak notes. No further. Can he introduce himself?
Hello, people out there. Listen, no apologies.
Sorry, can you tell us your name, please?
My name is Emeka Enyadike.
And who do you support?
I never walk alone. And, you know, he can say whatever he wants to say. Bottom line, at the end of the day, look, we scored the greatest goal ever. Done a storage.
That's not the greatest goal ever. You made it seem like Liverpool are going to run away.
That is what South Africa is called. Like, you know, finder.
Yeah, that's what it is. Look, We had a very rough week,
yeah.
But one thing that you don't want to give me credit for is that I did put a caveat, and that caveat was Hazard.
Yeah.
And I said if Hazard,
you did,
shows up like he's been doing, then you know anything can happen. And Eden Hazard over 2 games, I think that's who we should be talking about.
Yeah. Okay, I'm tempted to start there, but I'm actually going to bring it back. Bring it back, South Africa, over the weekend, Benny McCarthy, arguably South Africa's best export ever, South Africa's best player ever to put on a Bafana Bafana jersey, wins his first piece of silverware as a coach. This is what, his second season, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, look, this Benny McCarthy's achievement, it says a lot about what we should be doing.
Yeah.
You know, I did mention a few weeks ago that, look, if we really want to make progress in this country, we need to look at how we can bring back some of these players who have played in Europe, who have coaching qualifications. Because a lot of the coaches I'm no disrespect to the coaches who have always been here. The point is that there's so much that needs to change about how the tactical orientation of the teams are. And, you know, Benny McCarthy, one thing that I was really impressed with was going into the game, he talked about the fact that they lost on penalties and they were going to try and win the game within the time. But if it did go to penalties, they will make a plan. And you could see when it was time for the penalties that they chose the players right. They also had a goalkeeper who, you know, had not only studied the opponent but just was ready for everything that they threw at him. So,
you know, but I felt like he put the guy in the sticks the year before in the spotlight there.
Yes, he did, and you know, quite frankly, this was a performance that was really really commendable. And you know, when you think about it, Benny McCarthy had issues coming into the game with his wife being ill and all that. Yeah. So this was a
big recovery there.
Yeah, this win is not just a win for Benny McCarthy. It's a win for every young coach out there who's aspiring to go there. Because the biggest credit for me, I think, goes to John Committees, who had the in Nigeria, we'll say he had the liver. Some people will say something else. You know, to say, you know, I'm going to appoint Benny McCarthy as coach.
Yeah.
Without so much of an experience, you need to give the young guys a chance.
Yeah.
You know, Bradley Carnell, Sean, you know, any of those guys, we need to start giving them opportunities to coach at the highest level. You know, this is a huge win for Benny. Yes.
And for seven coaches. Now, before we started the podcast, well, you were talking about how, as much as the result goes to Cape Town, there's still that thing of that game should have been over early.
You know, to be honest with you, I was surprised by Cape Town City, to be honest, because you know, when you look at going into the fixture, you know, SuperSport, I'm sorry, Kaizer Chiefs fans, but they're the new cup kings of recent times, you know. And, you know, they have that swagger. They've been there before. They know what to do. So the pressure, the stage, is, you know, the lights aren't too bright for them. And they've got players who've won trophies before. And, you know, there was also a lot for them. I mean, Kaizer Chiefs was also looking for his maiden trophy. So there was also a lot for them to play for. But I was really impressed with Cape Town City in that game. They actually went for it. I think by halftime they should have been easily 3-0 up.
Absolutely.
And you know, they kept the momentum, but you know, they huffed and puffed and it didn't go in. But what I liked with Benny was Amika touched on, he started on the front foot. And I think that was his problem in the last cup final, was that, you know,
he was
set up, unsure.
Last year he was scared, but you could see,
very conservative. This time around, they actually went for it. And yeah. I must say, touching on, again, on what Amika said, this is massive for South African soccer. And, you know, we need more local coaches. And we also need fresh faces. I mean, it always seems like a bit of musical chairs in the South African soccer scene. You know, Ernst Middendorp, there's a job waiting for him somewhere, you know, along the line.
It used to be Gordon as well.
Yeah, Gordon is there somewhere. I'm sure when Baxter's done with Bafana, there's another team in the pipeline. You know, those sort of coaches have been around, and it's about time we start seeing fresh faces given the responsibility. And in Benny's case, you know, he's got the qualifications. I could be wrong, but I think him and Tebogo Moloi has also got a UEFA license, right? So they're also very, very highly qualified coaches. So it's good to see guys that were former players plowing back into the country. I mean, we always want our players to go play overseas and go, you know, improve.
I know Benny very well. I mean, during his playing days when I was a kickoff, he used to go on holiday and he'll come to the office. One thing I never saw with Benny, I never saw him as the guy who ended up as a coach, because Benny loved the good life. You know, he likes to party, he likes to have fun. But one thing, I think Rob Moore, who was his agent and advisor, did for him was, Rob did say at the time Benny's career was coming to an end, that look, Benny has helped me make a lot of money and all that. I'm going to invest back in Benny. So the first thing he did was force Benny to go do his coaching, his badges in Scotland.
Yeah, sure.
And Rob said, I'll pay. This is my way of paying back. And you know, we just have to look at, this is a testimony, and this is a case study of how we can harness some of the best talent that we've got.
Yes, and for me, touching on that, you know, we always worry about our footballers, about life after once they've done playing. And I think for me, you know, not everybody's going to have a stellar career where, you know, they play consistently for, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, you know, 20 years, you know. So not everybody's going to get to that level. So I think it's very important that, you know, some players who might not be like standout players, you know, end up being very good coaches.
Yeah.
Arsene Wenger wasn't, you know, one of the best players. Neither Mourinho, hardly.
Oh, Klopp.
Mourinho didn't even get into the professional ranks. Klopp.
Yeah, so Klopp was a player for Mainz.
You know, they weren't really like standout players. So I think this is also an eye-opening scenario for guys that, okay, maybe, you know, we probably don't even know who they are.
Right.
They probably come in as substitutes. Also for them to say, look, my career doesn't look like it's going to play out for, you know, 10 plus years.
But the desire for the game.
I've been in the game. I have a desire for the game. I'm learning from my coach. I play. This could be an opportunity for them to also say, look, let me also create a life for myself after I'm done. And I think Benny has set the tone for these guys.
You know, Grey Cup final, win on penalties. But at the same time, I guess I'm also looking at what SuperSport have done for themselves in terms of these guys are continually there, even to hop on what you were talking about them being the Cup Kings. I mean, I was listening to the commentator, something that was Mark Leeson, and he said, SuperSport United, this is their 10th Cup final in 6 seasons. Going into this MTN 8 final, they had won 5 out of 9 going to the MTN 8. So
that's 5 out of 10 now. So that's 1 in every 2
finals. 1 in every 2.
SuperSport are going to win. So that's why I was saying that, you know, in recent times, I mean, you can't, they're the numbers, the facts are right there. You can't deny it. They are the recent Cup Kings. And, you know, it also speaks to SuperSport's organization. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's one, let me not say if there's one, but one of a few clubs in our country that, you know, in terms of an organization, you know, how they set up the team, the club is run well. You never hear problems. You never hear, you know, players going AWOL as you hear with other clubs. They always seem to keep their business in order. It's SuperSport. And you can see they've reaped the rewards from that. So that's something maybe other clubs could also look at and say, hey, look, you know, if you keep your... you keep your unit in order, you keep the club running properly and smoothly, you keep the players happy, you sign the right players, you sign the right coaches, you know, you're bound to be successful.
And it just seems like, especially there, it looks like the front office always has a plan. Even when they lose a person like Baxter, they've always got a plan. They lose someone like Tinkler, they've always got a plan. And it just seems like there's a conveyor belt of good decisions.
One thing that I do, I must say, I appreciate about SuperSport is that what they do really well, this is what AC Milan used to do back in the day.
Yeah.
In fact, they still kind of do it, is when they sign veteran players,
yeah,
they sign the veteran player that is needed in a specific position. So, I mean, you looked at Yaya, for example. Right. You thought, okay, maybe his career is done. Maybe, you know,
he might have failed it.
But they sign him in,
yeah,
and they put him in the midfield, and he's there to teach, he's there to guide, he's there to impart his knowledge. The SuperSport have been doing that for years, yeah, now when they sign veteran players. And I know a lot of people criticize them, you know, saying that they're in old age home, they just signed all these old players. But like you said, they have a plan, they, yeah, know exactly what they're doing. So that's the one thing that I've seen SuperSport really do well over the years, is they sign veteran players in specific positions where those players aren't necessarily there to take the spotlight, but they're there to help. Maybe it's on and off the field, but you can see by those stats, I mean, 10 cup finals and 5 of them won, you know, the fruits of their labor right there.
But I mean, look, he had a quiet game, you know, much less than his usual standards. Because I think for SuperSport United, he's been really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, like you said earlier, I thought this game, Cape Town City went about it with a lot more verve than you would imagine. Yeah. So they gave it so much, and in the end, I think they deserve to win.
Now, here's a enjoy the game, enjoy the spectacle. I guess for me, one of the things we were talking about earlier, guys, is as much as we enjoyed the match, what we saw around it. I mean, why are these games going to Durban? And you look at the results in terms of how many people were actually at the stadium. Why are these matches going to? Why are these games going to Durban?
You know, there are reasons that obviously we won't know.
Yeah.
PSL and SAFA have their reasons why they move these games. You know, I feel that when you have two teams that are on opposite ends of the country,
yeah,
right? Cape Town, and it doesn't get any more opposite than that, right? Put it somewhere where, you know, fans don't get to see much football.
Yeah.
You know, Polokwane, Amika did say Polokwane, or you can put at the Mbombela if necessary, right? Because then I think you can galvanize the entire town,
yeah,
you know, that don't see many cup finals, that don't see many matches,
yeah,
right? And I suppose now in Polokwane Limpopo, you know, they've got two teams now in the Premiership. So yeah, I guess they get to see it. So maybe Mbombela would have been a better choice, you know, because they don't get to see much football.
Right.
And another cup final there would have been exciting. And I think you can bring the whole town. And, you know, this was a big game.
I mean,
you had two former players, one former Bafana player, SuperSport, you know, going for another cup, Cape Town City looking to etch their name into the history books. And there was a lot going for this game. And
yeah,
the turnout, I must say, was quite disappointing, you know, for me to see, because this was actually a big game. I know we always lick our lips whenever it's a Chiefs Pirates or Sundowns Pirates Sundowns Chiefs, yeah, final, but this game actually lived up to the billing. And
it
was just sad that, you know, we didn't get the numbers, you know.
And you know,
we did get quite a good crowd with the cup final last year, even though it was Free State.
Yes.
The one thing that I would say is with this cup finals, and also even with Bafana games, is how the provinces and the cities get involved in the pitch for bringing the games to their cities. And so what you find is that KZN and to a large extent the Itakwini municipality are very proactive.
Yeah.
They always want to bring those things there because they for them it adds up to their whole economic strategy, because the more events they bring in there, the more they get their you know, resorts and facilities filled up. People coming to Durban not just for the game.
Yeah.
I bet you there are probably some people that traveled for that game and ended up not going to the game. They went to have fun.
It was early, which is good.
They went to have fun at the sea. I would have loved to go to the game.
Yeah.
For more than just the game, because you know that I grew up by the sea, and you know, living in Johannesburg sometimes can be very claustrophobic.
Yeah.
So if I went to Durban, I could get lost just hanging out by the sea and forget to go to the game. So there needs to be even more work, because if you're wanting to bring the game there, but they have to do a lot more marketing to get people to go and watch the game, because what I've seen a few times that I've been to games that involved either, especially Chiefs playing against someone else,
yeah,
is that the stadium is always full
because that's your card.
Chiefs has got a very great marketing machine, and that's why they can play anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, like, the interesting thing was, I remember we were speaking earlier, there was that final in 2009 Orlando Stadium. It was Golden Arrows against Ajax Cape Town.
Yes.
And that game was full at Orlando Stadium.
Lots of goals, sir.
Lots of goals, 6-0, I remember, and there was a little blackout there. I think just still load shedding or something's going on there. But when you think about, they can do this. They can move games to places where, you know what, it's a smaller stadium, we can call people.
Teams from different cities as well. Different provinces.
Bringing in children from that neighborhood, coming in and watching.
I think 2009, not your best example, because anything could have happened. That was the year before the World Cup, where even if you recall, they had the Blue Bulls playing in
Sweden.
No, I'm saying that, you know, all of that because the stadiums were not available and they had to move those finals to another stadium and a few other.
But the impetus is there to move these games to places there where it can work.
Makes us better? Rivalry. This is the ABSA Premiership.
Liverpool against Chelsea. Now, Emeka, this is a shout out to you. What's happening? What happened?
I think the fact that by the way,
1-1 on the weekend. Liverpool lost 2-1 in the Carabao.
Yes, I did say something. It wasn't even about Liverpool. Yeah. I said something earlier that when you play in midweek and play in the Carabao Cup or whatever cup competition, and you make wholesale changes, what happens is you better win, because if you don't, then you get a lot of pressure, because I mean, you're playing the same team, and both Liverpool and Chelsea made a lot of changes. But when you look at the strength of the Chelsea team, it doesn't matter who you put on the bench, they've got far more quality. And one thing that has worked for them this season is the fact that Sarri has come in with a very attacking mindset. And that's, you know, it's pretty much the players are governors. These are players who know how to win. It's like United as well. If you bring a coach who's not Mourinho, who's got a very forward thinking and forward playing mindset, he will galvanize the players. So credit to Chelsea. I think they came back. Remember, they came from behind to win that game. And then also in the league game over the weekend, most people still felt Liverpool had the edge. But I thought that Chelsea really played a very, very smart game on that day, because they knew that possession wise they were as smart, but they did as much as they can defensively to try and contain everyone. They were lucky. Salah got past the keeper, ball cleared off the line. Firmino headed the ball off the line, and then you had, you know, Shaqiri coming in and missing a goal and all that. But the two chances that Chelsea had in that game was kind of epitomized how they played on that day. Two great passes, one from David Luiz all the way to I think it was Willian on the right, and then the second one was Kovacic again who passed. No, it was Conte. It was a quick free kick and he passed to Hazard, and had on both occasions. Alisson.
It was amazing.
No, it was amazing. I mean, someone was saying to me over the weekend that, he couldn't save the ball from Hazard. I'm saying, you can't blame the keeper. Yeah. You've got to give credit to Hazard, because Hazard took it.
You know, I saw that. I also saw that the goal on Instagram.
Yeah.
Right. I was searching through my Instagram. You know, when they have the fans and they're filming, even on a fan's camera.
Yeah.
That goal still looks like a bullet.
Point.
He had no chance.
He took it. Well ahead of the keeper's.
It was a snapshot as well. It wasn't like, you know, he had loaded it back and
it was a snapshot
and just went.
Even Sturridge's goal. You think that where he was, is he gonna cross to someone or whatever? He was standing. He literally took that shot standing. So sometimes I think that we kind of want to blame keepers. I think sometimes, you know, you got to give credit to the player who because that's why.
I mean, Amika, it's like the lottery. If you don't play, you won't win. So if he doesn't have the audacity to go for it from there, you know, because he believes that he can score from there, Sturridge, and he did. I must give Sarri credit. You know, I was very critical about him at the start of the season, I must be honest, and I might have to eat my words soon. Because from what I've seen, Sarri has introduced at Chelsea, And I think this is the problem that is happening at Manchester United. Sarri looks like he's, you know, he looks like an old man that's just arms folded and just says, guys, just play. I'll correct where need be, but just play. I've even seen images and a video footage of Chelsea training and Sarri in the background. And he's just there, hands on his sides, just watching, observing. He doesn't seem like, you know how, what Mourinho looks like at United, always hands on, you, this, that, and getting into players' faces. And it seems to be working at Chelsea, because last season that was the issue apparently with Conte, was that, you know, they felt that Conte was too hands on and, you know, he was directing everything. And Sarri seems like he's coming there and he says, look, guys, I just want to win. Play how you play or how you want to play, and I'll direct things. And, you know, in the game, the Carabao Cup game, it was interesting for me to see even Hazard on the bench, I must be honest with you, because I would have thought that, you know, they would have saved him for the league rather. But it just shows that the guy wants to win it. Right. You know, it's a trophy, and he wants to win it.
That is. I mean, if you win it, it's
a big trophy, you know. And going to the league game, to be honest with you, I was impressed with Liverpool. I must be honest with you. I thought they controlled the game well. Jordan Henderson surprised me. He also had quite a decent game. I mean, in the midfield there with him and Jorginho there, that was a real good battle with him and Jorginho there. And I really thought Liverpool were going to edge it. But I think one thing that Sarri did do well, though, towards before the goal came, I think he sort of changed the shape of the team. And
first goal of the...
Before Chelsea's goal, he changed the shape of the team. And you could see that something happened where they were starting to play with more speed. They were, you know, getting up front more. And, you know, they're doing all of this, by the way, guys, with no striker getting shots on target.
Yeah.
So the moment, you know, Chelsea start getting a striker or one of their strikers firing, they could be deadly.
Now, and as for Liverpool, what is strange is you know, most of their goals have come either from Hazard or from Alonso.
Exactly. So, you know, they're unbeaten. Both teams, but one of them, in fact, even Liverpool, Firmino hasn't really fired this season, you know. So I must say, it is quite daunting when you think about it that both teams are on top of the log and their strikers haven't even, you know, woken up from their sleep yet.
Daniel Sturridge has scored more goals this season than he did the entire last season.
Daniel Sturridge has got more goals than Morata and Giroud combined, I think.
Now, Daniel Sturridge, there's a bit of a renaissance going on there, but looking at Mo Salah, it's not cracking this season. It's not happening. And you look at what's happening with Eden Hazard in terms of he's actually, this is his season's picked up. It's almost like he had the World Cup and he's back. Like, I'm ready to show why a team like Real Madrid would be interested in me. Mo Salah has struggled to.
I think with Salah, I'm not too worried. If he wasn't getting into scoring positions, I'll be worried. But you know, he went around the keeper, and you know, just if he did like Hazard, and immediately shot as soon as he went past the keeper, the ball went a bit further from him than he probably would have wanted. But you know, before he was taken out, he controlled everything that Liverpool created. He had a chance where he needed to pick out either Mane or so from the left, or was it Firmino? He didn't quite click, and then he had all of that snapshot which he took. Salah is getting into position. If I look at last season, at this point last season, I think he scored the same number of goals and was missing a lot of chances. Yeah. The good thing about this team is that they haven't really hit. If they were driving a car, I'd probably say they are still in second gear, because you find that, you know, somehow Klopp has been getting them to be a lot more restrained.
Yeah.
And you know, the good thing is it has given them a chance to also give Shaqiri an opportunity to play. So maybe what will work.
Oh, that chance though, eh?
Yeah, I mean, look.
But you know what I feel though with Liverpool, looking at Salah's season so far, I think he's playing with house money, right? Because nobody expected him to score
40 goals.
Okay, I know. I'm saying in the league now, right? Yeah. Nobody expected the amount of goals that he scored. So coming into this season, obviously the focus is on him. But guys, there's also Sadio Mane. Right, there's also Roberto Firmino. Now they've added Shaqiri. So,
and they've got Sturridge in the back.
And they've got Sturridge now. It seems like he's also, you know, putting his hand up. So I think for him, I wouldn't be too worried if I was him, because now that means that, you know, Liverpool are joint top, and he's not playing well. So he should just say, you know what, I'm not playing well. That's fine. I don't need to score another 30 goals a season. Sure. I'm not Harry Kane. Harry Kane needs to score 30 goals a season. Aguero needs to score that, right? Because if those teams' success is dependent on that. Whereas in Liverpool's case, if Salah scores 20 goals this season. That's okay. Mane's going to come in with another 15 somewhere. Firmino with another 15, 20. So they're not dependent on Salah. So I wouldn't be too worried. I know everybody's calling it a slump, but you know he's had chances to also score. So I really wouldn't be too worried. If you're top of the league and your best player isn't playing well, why would you even worry?
Sure. And Chelsea are in striking distance. Sarri wouldn't have said it going into the season, in striking distance. And that's mainly because of, of Eden Hazard. Eden Hazard, is he wasted in the Premier League?
You know, to be completely honest with you, Eden Hazard, I think he's having that sort of season that Ronaldo had before he went to Real Madrid.
Yes,
the kick season.
That season, right? The season before Van Nistelrooy also had before he went to Madrid. I think it's just Eden Hazard is growing in stature.
Yeah.
And what I think is also itching Eden Hazard, he's sitting there and he's looking at these FIFA World Player of the Year lists and their
Ballon d'Or lists
and whatnot. And he's sitting there and he's thinking, hang on a sec, you know, I play my butt off all week. I create chances for my team. I score for my team. And, you know, all these guys are getting these accolades. And I think he's finally breaking off these shackles to say, you know what, let me just play me and let me not worry so much about, you know, if I know it seems like in his case in Chelsea, there's almost a dependence on him. I think now he's turning that around to say, you know what, let me just play for me. Let me just play for me and everything will go well. And I think that's what he did well at the World Cup, because he played for himself and everybody else complimented him at the World Cup. And now it seems like the moment he plays for himself at Chelsea, everything else falls in line. Because if you look at it this way, if Eden Hazard, right, becomes a complimentary player at Chelsea, Chelsea don't do well, right? But if he plays for himself and takes the mantle, Chelsea do well. So I think it's about time that, you know, Eden Hazard plays this way. I've been waiting for Hazard. You see it when Ronaldo, when he was at Madrid.
Yeah.
You see it with Messi. You see it with Neymar. Those guys take the game by the scruff of his neck and they play for themselves. And I think that little bit of a selfish streak is what separates. That's why Messi scores 40, 50 and Ronaldo.
Because he has
there is that selfishness that you need in you to get to that level. And it's about time it's coming out now. And boy, I tell you what, if you're a Chelsea fan or if you're Roman Abramovich, it pleases you because you know, listen, if he's going to go, he's given us everything we could have asked for.
Yeah.
There's no way less than 200 million is coming in.
Well, I think one thing also that people overlook is the effect of Giroud on Eden Hazard, because the way Hazard plays, he almost needs to have a foil, have someone there in the box that he can do a little give and go, somebody who can hold up there and let him run into space. So what you find with him is that the goals that he scored this season, he's scoring from every corner. He comes in from the left, he comes in from the right, he comes in from the middle. Once he's around the box, he almost, because what I love about Hazard is that Hazard is difficult to dispossess. If he has the ball on him, he has the ability to dribble in small spaces, and he also has the ability to conjure up a shot out of nowhere. So sometimes he actually needs someone to distract the defenders. Maybe now that he's scoring goals, people will probably try, because Liverpool did one thing, they tried to contain him as much as they could. And throughout the game, the two times that he went free, there were free balls into space that he had to run onto. Otherwise, you know, like him trying to play in tiny spaces, they closed him down really, really, really well.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he's one of two people with a hat-trick this season. I think it's just him and Aguero.
The two of them. And, you know, Hazard looks like he's going to score a lot of goals this season.
I see 20 at least.
Maybe more. I think he'll probably score more.
Now, Chelsea's doing good. Liverpool in the mix. Manchester City, them and Manchester City leading the way. City with a win over the weekend as well. Manchester United, lost his favorite topic, not here to defend himself.
As usual, as usual in United.
Well, you made a, I thought I had a conspiracy theory that with Zidane being in London, that Manchester United were going to
I don't remember, but I did see something about them even issuing a statement or trying to distance themselves from Zidane.
Exactly, and there were reports that, you know, United had made contact. Yeah. Zidane and Mourinho, something like that. Look, let's cut to the chase, okay? Jose Mourinho is not going to last the season at Manchester United. Okay, it's not possible.
Yeah.
It's just not possible. I don't think a simple dinner in flowers is going to end the Pogba situation. I don't think United are just suddenly...
Are the reconciliation talks afoot?
I don't think that's going to happen, right? Because you know Mina Raiola is watching every single move that is happening between those two. And in fact, it's to his best interest that those two don't get along, right? Because he knows that
he can
there's another 20-odd million
waiting
for him. The more this goes on, the feud with him and Pogba. Because one of them have to leave, but... Looks like to me Mourinho could be the one out. But my point is, it's not going to change at Manchester United, okay? Jose is not all of a sudden going to... I mean, he went to West Ham, guys, playing Fellaini, Matic and Pogba in the midfield.
Right.
Right? I could not believe he showed West Ham that amount of respect. So,
but
already...
Tomine in the back three, he's got...
No.
When he's got Bailly.
Zamo, back five. Back five. He played with five defenders.
But Ashley Young and
he played. Yeah, he played with five defenders. So, how long can this go on for? And to me, it's the ideal time to get rid of Mourinho. This is exactly what happened with Rafa Benitez at Real Madrid. They got rid of him early. There was still a lot to play for, a lot to galvanize. And, you know, Zidane, you know, is one of those managers that his reputation alone galvanizes anybody. You know, it's the great Zidane.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you play for him?
No, I think Zidane replaced Ancelotti.
You think so?
No,
Ancelotti. Ancelotti. The Rafa Benitez situation
was what predicated the Ancelotti.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Sorry, got things mixed up. So that was the whole thing that got Real Madrid started and kicked off. You know, their run of form. They got business done early. They got rid of some. They cut off the snake's head. You know, before.
I don't know. If they want to pay £26 million. That's what they need to pay to get Mourinho off the.
But
off
what is £26 million to Manchester United? They can find
still,
it under
still,
someone's
still
bed.
The most profitable. What sporting.
They can find it under somebody's bed, that amount of money, right, to get rid of Mourinho.
Yeah.
The other thing that I want to say is that, you know, in terms of Manchester United, and I'm saying this as an Arsenal fan and as a football fan, guys, it's over.
Yeah.
It's over. I think Manchester...
Wait, what is over?
I'll tell you now, right? The clout, the stature, the fee, five, four, farm, here come Manchester United... I think it's over. They need to press the reset button. They need to find ways of getting back to, you know, that giant status. It's not like in La Liga where Real Madrid can go 4 years without winning the league, but then they can win three Champions Leagues in a row, and they're one of two big teams in that league, and everything's going to be all right. They'll always be in the hunt. In England, top six, you know, is not guaranteed.
It's not good enough.
Right? It's not guaranteed. Yeah. And on top of that, there are smaller teams that are getting better that make it difficult for you to... There are no guaranteed results anymore. Man United West Ham was a guaranteed win for Man United. It's no longer.
It's not.
It's not anymore.
And,
so,
and guys are playing out of their skin.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying, is that I think Man United have lost that fear factor. They've lost it.
I don't agree. I think that, you know, Mourinho is still capable of changing his ways. Whether he will, you know, it's difficult. It's left to conjecture. However, I still think that, you know, United can change things around. If you remember, Mourinho came in and won two trophies, you know, just out of nothing. The possibility that, you know, he finished second last season, which means that if he can just be a little bit less, you know, guarded in his strategy, the team could possibly push amongst with the other three. The one thing that I see is the possibility that United can say, okay, look, we want to get rid of Mourinho, we're getting a coach like Zidane or one of the, you know, the coaches that could become available, that may be fit into the team, and then all of a sudden
they change. Interrupt you, right? You know, when I look at the landscape and I look at Manchester United, I'm pretty sure either Ed Woodward or the Glazers, if they are paying attention, right? I'm pretty sure
they're looking at the money.
Right? I'm pretty sure they're looking at the landscape and they're saying, okay, let's look at the top six. They're looking at Pochettino and they see the player-coach relationships. They're looking at club player-coach fan relationship. Unai Emery is coming in, you can see the player coach fan relationship, Sarri player coach fan, and so forth.
City, simply.
Right, City, you can see it. Man United,
non-existent. And when that is non-existent, to me, that is the beginning of the end of whoever that manager is. When you cannot touch bases with your players and there's no relationship with the fans. Manchester United is a very, very fan-driven organization as well, because people like to see Manchester United as just a club. It's also an organization, right? So when there is no relationship on either end between the coach and players and the club, that to me is a big problem, because then you start thinking about the money situation. This is what got Wenger in troubles with the owners at Arsenal, right? With Kroenke and them, was that it started to hurt their pockets. People weren't coming to the stadiums. People weren't buying merchandise. And once the owners start feeling that,
in the Premier League.
Exactly, yeah. Right? They start thinking, hang on now, right? I know it's Manchester United, but we didn't come here to lose money. So when fans start revolting and, you know, you start seeing empty seats at Old Trafford, people don't come to those. I mean, we haven't even touched on the shock exit, you know, in the Carabao Cup. When things like that start happening, it all builds up to just, you know, dissension amongst the club. And usually the first person to go is the manager. So that's why for me, when I look at it, you know, United situation, you can't get rid of Paul Pogba until January if you wanted to.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. And I don't know how many more of these results United have under them, but I looked at
it going.
You can just see the trajectory does not point to a positive thing. If your manager rocks up with five defenders against a team that hasn't beaten them in a decade in competitive football, then I don't know where you think your club is going. But to me, if Mourinho come December 31st is still at Manchester United, I don't know. I think it will be a miracle. A miracle. I thought he'd be fired by this weekend, but it'll be a miracle if he's still there by
Well, he still has to play against Valencia in the Champions League. Anything else has happened, of course, you can't afford to go lose to Derby County, lose to West Ham, and then lose to Valencia. That'll be, you know, how would I put it, like red lights for the owners.
Yeah.
And you touched on the point which I agree with, which is about his connection with the fans. I think he's a very polarizing factor. Figure, which we all know. My worry with him then is that, you know, I've always held this belief over the last two seasons that his methods are catching up with him, because there's far greater, you know, younger managers with better ideas coming through, and you know, you play against Derby County and you can't beat them. It doesn't matter who you put out there.
Frank Lampard, the guy just hung up his boots like yesterday,
yeah,
and he
yeah, exactly. It'll be interesting to see what happens when Lampard comes up against Chelsea. But with Mourinho, he's just not good for Manchester United, because he doesn't respect the club enough. He comes out, I mean, I was watching his latest press conference where he was saying that some of his players don't care enough. You know, you are the manager. You're supposed to try and get your players galvanized. I mean, you look at Klopp and his players. Some of the players, I mean, with Klopp, he didn't. Yes, he bought Alisson and Van Dijk and Skater for a lot of money. But if you look at the bulk of that team, he got players that were in the team that were not firing to suddenly step up a notch.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at James Milner and Jorginho Wijnaldum, they are playing, I mean, Wijnaldum in particular is playing so well this season that you wonder if Keita is going to get a shirt.
The other thing, sorry, I know we have to move off this topic, that I've really found weird about Mourinho over the last couple of years he's been at Manchester United. Excuse the pun, but he throws his players under the bus,
yeah,
right, a lot of the times on the field as well. I look at people like Rashford and Martial. He plays them when there is so much to play for.
Did you hear his post-match conference?
I heard of the conference.
He says that, I'm paraphrasing, he says, people were complaining about that Sanchez isn't performing, so I saw to reason. I said, okay, I listened, then I brought in Martial. And then you're like, ah, this guy.
Exactly. So that's my point, is that even when, you know, you can sort of, okay, try and get, you know, turn things around, okay, Mourinho still throws his players under the bus.
Yeah.
When I looked at that starting lineup and I looked, okay, Martial's in this game, I'm thinking, this is a huge game.
Yeah.
And you're throwing Martial in there, who's hardly played, he's low in confidence.
Undercooked.
And I'm not sure that's good for a player when your manager puts you out there, out to dry. He's putting you in there because the man that was signed to start there isn't playing well. So it's almost like an ultimatum for Martial, in a way. And I think that's why he's not getting the best out of his plays. Mm. Because now, Jesse Lingard hasn't played.
He didn't even travel.
He didn't even travel. I don't know how long Jesse Lingard hasn't played. And now, you'll probably find yourself thrust him into the game against Valencia when the guy hasn't played and there's a lot to play for, and that sort of pressure, professional or not professional, that eats anybody.
It does.
And as you can see with the United's players, they're not responding to that pressure. Hmm. Right? It's pressure enough playing for Manchester United. It's pressure enough playing for Jose Mourinho. Now added to that, when Jose throws you that in games where you need a result and you're low in confidence, that's not going to bode well for any team.
Speaking of, so we're going to move off Manchester United. Before we go into a break, well, Arsenal 7 wins in a row. But the big talking point here is, Aaron Ramsey. They're not willing, they pulled the contract off the table.
To be completely honest with you, I know somebody close to the situation about what's happening in there, okay? Ozil's wages are a problem.
Book balancing.
Right. It's as simple as that. Mesut Ozil's wages are a problem. They were a problem to me as an Arsenal fan because, you know, when you pay somebody that amount of money, you know, can that person be, you know, the goal scorer of the team as opposed to somebody that is, supposed to be an orchestrator?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I need the goal scorer earning that amount. And I think that the offer that was given to Ramsey, you know, I don't blame the guy. He's been there longer than, you know, I think he's the longest tenured player in our starting lineup.
I think so.
Right now, right? He is.
From the juniors,
right? He is. Okay. And I think he's sitting there and he's thinking, guys, I've been here for 10 years. Remember, Ramsey also turned down some offers a few years ago. And this is what you can do for me. You can't even put me on Mesut Ozil's level in terms of wages. And for him, as a young man, 10 years at Arsenal, 3 FA Cups, hasn't won a league title. What more could he give the club? You know, so it's with a heavy heart, but I think, you know, for him as well, on a personal standpoint, it's good for him to go. There's nothing more he can offer Arsenal at this point. And to be fair, Unai Emery at least has been playing him. You know, I know usually in these situations, whenever there's a contract dispute with a player, you know, you don't see the player playing for some weeks. So there's still value to be had in that guy. Maybe by playing him, they can convince him, hey, look, we're still playing you. You know, you can stay. But
let's talk it out.
To me, I think, you know, Ramsey's given Arsenal all he can in the last 10 years. And what more can we get from him?
Before we go to break, there's a murmur that Liverpool might be interested in him.
Well, I mean, it's possible.
They've already taken Oxley, now they want Ramsey.
Look, the good thing about Liverpool is that, like I said earlier, you know, with players who are struggling, there seems to be some kind of magic with Klopp and how he gets them to play. And if you look at Ox, most people wrote off Ox. And then he came into Liverpool. First game he played, there was a massive defeat, and the question at the end was, you know, is he going to be on the bench? Until he got injured, he became like
I mean, that semi-final against
Man City.
Wow.
He was unbelievable.
Where's that off speed at Arsenal?
Yes, exactly. So sometimes you look at players, they probably need to move on to find themselves. And I think Ramsey, you know, apart from injuries, he's also been part of the problem of Arsenal, because he's there even when he hits his best.
Yeah.
The people around him don't rise up to that level. So maybe he needs one more big move to a big club to go and try and do something. Because if you look at Jack Wilshere, for me, one of the most gifted players in the league, eventually made this wrong turn where he went on loan to I think it was Burnley, and then now he went to West Ham. Sorry, Burnley, and then he went to West Ham. You know, you need to, like Ox, you need to take a chance and go to a big club. Then you are inspired because you have played around players with Mokoda. And I think that for Ramsey, a move to Liverpool would be a great move for him, because he might not play every game, but, you know, he can actually play himself into contention. And it'll be sad for Arsenal to let him go, because he epitomizes everything that the old Arsenal represents. But, you know, with Unai Emery, seen a renaissance, because what this Arsenal team is a team that put players that need to work hard. You need to to win back the possession. But you know, if you look at Ox at Liverpool, he had to learn how to do that. So maybe if I was him, I would stay back at Arsenal and, you know, try and be part of what is happening now, because the team is doing well.
Only SuperSport can put you in a front row seat to the best football leagues this season. Catch every Premier League, UEFA Champions League, UEFA Nations League, ABSA Premiership and La Liga match live. And now, it's the only place to watch every minute of the Serie A on SuperSport 9. Get your front row seat and watch all the football that matters. Only on SuperSport.
And we're back. Gents, before we touch a little bit on Champions League, in La Liga, over this past weekend, a draw in the Madrid derby. Disappointment, wasn't really fireworks, and then the insult at the end of it all. Real Madrid fans chanting in the stands, "Ronaldo, Ronaldo."
You know, it was one of those games. I mean, there was a lot to play for Real Madrid in terms of a revenge factor. Yeah. Remember, they lost the UEFA Super Cup to Atletico, and it's a Madrid derby, so, you know, bragging rights, of course. And I must be honest with you, it was a boring game. You know, so much attacking talent on either side, and Madrid derby, you know, Madrid's got a new coach, new setup, new style, but they played stale football. Mm-hmm. And that's the worst, actually, I've seen Real play this entire season. Even in the loss that they had, they played better than this. And, you know, it just didn't live up to the billing for me. You know, it was one of those games where I actually didn't even finish the match. You know, sure. I left, I think, 10, 12 minutes to go. I'm like, you know, I tried and I don't see a goal coming. And I think both teams in the end were happy to stay with the point. I thought they would have capitalized because Barcelona did lose. They did draw earlier in the day. So I thought maybe this was a good chance for them to also just, for Atletico to catch up and for Real Madrid to extend their lead. And it seems like Real Kana seem to overtake Barca. Barca lose, they lose. Barca draw, they draw. So, you know.
For me, I think that at the end of the day, you know, Real Madrid needs to go out there and get another big player, a big attacking player. Because Ronaldo, you know, for those games, especially the games against Barcelona and the games against Atletico Madrid, there was always that extra edge where, you know, there are times when you need to dig something out of the hole, and, you know, he used to produce some moments, either moments where he gets sent off or he creates a moment where there's a magic, either he scores or he gets some late penalty or something. There was just something, and I wasn't surprised that the fans were chanting his name because, you know, my big disappointment is I saw the first Super Cup game where Atletico really, really blew them out eventually. And for some reason, I think, you know, they would have looked at Real Madrid and think, oh, without Ronaldo, they're not good. And then suddenly they see Real Madrid as so much competitive the entire season. And then, you know, in this particular game, Real Madrid had lost the previous week at Sevilla. And so going into this game, maybe Atletico were a bit kind of complacent, and they underestimated them. And they got, you know, a much more cagey Madrid team that didn't want to give away anything. In the end, both teams couldn't take advantage of Barcelona's sleep, and then, you know, it makes La Liga look quite difficult to appreciate at this point in time, because you see, even with Messi, that without Ronaldo, he seems to be missing
something.
Yeah.
He's missing that thing. Maybe not to. I wanted to do this at the end of the show. It was like a bit of a news thing, but news coming out of the news: Cristiano Ronaldo and a charge of potential rape against him, or a lady in Las Vegas claiming that he raped her in 2009. That's a touchy subject, especially when you consider all the stuff that's going on with the Me Too campaign and all of that. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, for me,
I hope it's not true. I mean, I saw something Ronaldo posted on social media yesterday where he was saying, you know, people try and do stuff around my name. I hope it's not true, because the one thing that you know, it's difficult these days to comprehend is when you have these accusations, you've got to listen to it because you know, it's difficult, especially for women sometimes, yeah, to actually come out and say this happened or that didn't happen. And sometimes also these things happen and they try, you know, the agents and managers try and play it under the carpet. But we've seen a rise in these campaigns. And, you know, with the Me Too movement, with all that we've seen in the political scene in America, also with you know, pop culture, with Hollywood, we've seen so many people go down. And, you know, if this comes up with Ronaldo and it's not well managed, it could spill into other players as well. Because what's going to happen is people are going to say, and you look at this whole campaign over the U.S. Supreme Court Judge Kavanaugh, this came on the back of that.
Yeah.
And you have accusations, we could go back 5, 10, 15, 20 years, with players maybe another 10, 15 years. So people have to be very careful what they do, especially with players. They have to be very careful what they do with their social life, because sometimes if it's not drugs, it's, you know, we've seen players being charged with rape several times. Some of them never recovered from it. And Ronaldo is one of the biggest players, if not the biggest star in the world today. So it is a very, very...
It's a very sloppy...
And
very sensitive.
Sensitive moment that it's difficult, you know, for me to even go too deep into trying to analyze it. But I hope for all intents and purposes there's something that can be sorted out. And
I mean,
maybe it's not...
for me, when I look at it this way, is that, you know, in the world that we live in today... well, I can even go back further, right? Mike Tyson, right, went to prison because of this, right? Mike Tyson has broken people's jaw in public. He's broken so many, you know, laws walking down the street.
Yeah.
But that did not take him to prison. So it was rape. Whenever you're accused of that, you need to stop whatever you're doing
and deal with it.
This situation has to be addressed with. So I know there's some people that have this belief that, oh no, it's Cristiano Ronaldo. No, Mike Tyson went to prison for this. Kobe Bryant, right, nearly lost his career because of this.
Yeah.
So in Ronaldo's case, you know, I hope, you know, for the sake of the women out there, it doesn't get shoved under the, you know, doesn't get swept under the carpet, and, you know, they deal with it in a transparent way. And I think, you know, players also need to learn from each other's mistakes or transgressions that have happened over the years. And I certainly hope in Ronaldo's case, you know, that wasn't the case. But at the same time, you know, you cannot dismiss an accusation like that. It has to be dealt with by the law, first of all.
Absolutely.
I know on social media, everybody thinks they're lawyers now. They know how to, you know, what's going to happen. But, you know, we also have to think for the poor woman who, you know, has laid out this accusation, because, you know, in many cases, something like this, you know, often the victims, you know, they just get swept under the rug, and it's all about, you know, the man who's being accused here. So in Ronaldo's case, I think he needs to deal with it, you know, because I know in Spain, he didn't deal the tax situation quite well. I know
you had Maradona and his tax thing followed him even past his playing career.
His drugs thing still
exactly. So it could be any of those things. But you know, we've seen in recent times there's a rise in these campaigns, and you know, it just cannot be swept under the carpet.
And the bigger they are in this situation, the harder they fall, unfortunately. So I just hope he deals with it, and it's a transparent situation. And, you know, it's not one of those things where, you know, as much as I'm a sports fan, but, you know, let's be real here. You also don't want one of these things where, oh, it's a guy with money, paid his way out.
Yeah.
And, you know, we never heard the end of the story.
Yeah.
I think it's very important that we find out the facts,
right?
The facts, what happened, and whether or not, you know, he is guilty or not guilty.
Sure. Touching on, before we close out, some Champions League action happening this week. Obviously, we'll be able to know the scores by the time this podcast comes out. Big matches, Liverpool versus Napoli, Tottenham versus Barcelona. Who of those four teams need a win?
To be completely honest with you, this is going to sound strange, but Barcelona need the win. more than any of those teams, because it's not just for the Champions League, it's just for the sake of their season. Because if you remember, Messi went on at the beginning of the season on the parade that, you know, we let our fans down over the years. The Champions League is our one of our main priorities. We've got a good squad, and they've played nowhere near like
team with Coutinho.
Exactly, they've played nowhere near like Champions League contenders in the league this season. I know they did well in their first game of the season, but you know that was against PSV. But I think Barcelona, if they really want to make the intentions clear in the Champions League, this is the game for them. Tottenham, to be honest with you, their group was difficult. You know, they had a really good chance against Inter. Yeah. They blew it. You know,
they can't afford to lose this game.
No.
To be honest, they can't afford to lose it, but I still think it's bigger for Barcelona in the context of what they set out this season.
Absolutely.
You know, the Barcelona
losing to Leganes.
They've also splashed the cash this season. You know, so Liverpool, I think, you know, Liverpool, Napoli, that's from an interesting game because both teams sort of have similar type of players. I mean, you've got Koulibaly, you've got Van Dijk, you've got Mertens, you've got Salah, you've got Calais on that side, you've got Insigne, Firmino, and
you've got Allen, the guy.
Allen, you know, and
they're good. Napoli are a good team, so and they've got Ancelotti. Ancelotti is the coach.
And Ancelotti there. I think that could be an easy 1-1 or 2-2 draw. Hmm.
Sure, guys. Great episode 8. We're looking forward to some good matches. The Soweto Derby is what, a couple of weeks down the road?
No, but some 3 weeks coming.
And then we've got, I think the Soweto Derby, after the Soweto Derby, the very next day is El Clasico.
Yeah, absolutely. So. I mean, look, for some reason, there's always those two derbies together on a weekend, which makes for great spending time in front of TV or SuperSport. So it'll be simply amazing to see where Chiefs and Pirates are by the time the derby comes into play. It'll be nice to see they're still boots up there when that comes in. Then we might see a much more competitive game than we've seen in recent times. So I'm looking forward to it. I'd love to be at the game.
Well, you go to the derby.
Yes. I mean, look, it's our derby. Well, what else do we have? This is our game. This is the biggest derby of the year. I'm sorry, El Clasico, but this is it, you know. So, and you know, you've got Pirates on form, you know, and this
and
is
Chiefs as well.
Chiefs are also on form. Yeah. You know, Chiefs on form. I think, you know, it's about time that we have a derby at this stage of the season where both teams are on form and they still are.
We've seen them. They've struggled over the last few years. So most times the derbies don't mean so much, you know, but this one will count.
Last year's one was also fantastic because it was at a stage of the season where it meant a lot. Pirates needed to maintain, a certain point. You know, they didn't want to let Sundowns get away too far. And they had beaten Sundowns some weeks prior to that. So, you know, there was a good build-up to the derby of last year. So I'll come wait for that in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh. Well, that's how we close it out. Mzamo Moloi filling in for Loazi. Loazi, come back to your seat, guy.
Well, that's if Man United wins.
So oh, they, of course, yeah. They've got
to see about that.
Well, Man City will come visiting when Liverpool step out this weekend. So, as usual, we'll beat them. So, I'm not worried.
Big goals.
Who is this guy predicting 3-0 wins there? It's at the bridge.
Well, if there's one thing that will beat Man City, Liverpool, so I'm not bothered.
Either you're his friend or his enemy when the next time he sees you. This is episode 8 of Pitch Invasion, signing out.